Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another live edition of the Highbury Squad. It's Lockdown Series, Volume 2, Episode 24. Can you believe that? That just tells us how long we've been in lockdown. It's the round table, State of the Union of the Arsenal. I love these kinds of shows.
Good evening, everybody. So I'm not hosting. Don't panic. don't panic because she's the professional one. I'm not. But my lovely dear friend down below, Tom Canton from the Guna Talk TV, is on with us tonight. Not only do I know Tom from Twitter, we also spend quite a bit of time pre and post game at one of the pubs, and we have good debates, and our Tom's lovely. So, Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure. I think this is number two, I think. The last one was quite a while ago, though, to be fair.
Are you talking about Arsenal's form as a number two, or this is number two?
I wish we were number two right now. Great.
Have you ever been on our show before, Tom?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Back in the day. Back in the day.
I think maybe when we were the Hibernian Hills, maybe.
Yeah, I think it might have been, actually.
Maybe. Yeah. So I'm really pleased you're on with me, Tom, because it makes me feel like we're back at the Emirates and we're having a little chat around the bar with everybody, and we don't have Michael to drive us mad.
No.
Because when we have pictures done with young Michael in the Gooners pod, it seems Tom's face is just massive in every picture. They won't know what I'm talking about, but anyway. No,
it's mainly because you make me take them, which means when I take the selfie, my head is like the closest to the camera.
I look tiny. I love it. Between you and Mike. So. But anyway, welcome to the show, Tom. And hey,
Hey, babe. How you doing? Welcome back. You doing good? Happy Tuesday. Yay. Is it Tuesday? It's Tuesday. I never know in lockdown.
Nor do I. I woke up this morning and I went, like, honestly, it took me ages. Like, is it Monday, Wednesday? I don't know what day it is anymore. But I'm going to hand back to you because I just wanted to welcome Tom back to the show.
Well, listen, we're really stoked to have Tom. He's one of the coolest.
It's done.
Tom, she does it every time. She's got to hit her YouTube so she can start chatting with everyone.
And then on there.
You know what that means from a production point of view. You get that reverb, right? So yeah. I always forgive her for it, though. but we're delighted to have you here. Amesy, what do you mean? Tom warned you. Hi, Tom's point of view.
She did. You should have seen her on Twitter. I did not comment. I did not.
thanks to everyone from all corners of the earth joining us. This is the Roundtable, the State of the Union. And you know, at the Highbury Squad, we love to do shows that just go outside post-game analytics and reactionary stuff. And thanks for everyone for joining us. If you don't know what the State of the Union is, and I'm just going to need 2 or 3 minutes to read the State of the Union, because Tom wrote an article as well, which I may agree or disagree with, which is going to make for good conversation. And Amanda as well has been very much supportive of Mikel Arteta. This show is not a Mikel Arteta out show. This is just the type of show that talks honestly about what we see things in the moment, and kind of looking forward in terms of what Arsenal should be doing in the future. If you don't know what the State of the Union means, in the United States, the State of the Union happens every February, where the President of the United States talks about the state of the country and all the good things happening generally. But in this State of the Union, there's going to be a little bit of both, okay? And I want to be fair and balanced, not like Fox News, but I mean truly fair and balanced, okay? So I'm going to do this, and then I'm literally going to hand over to Amanda and Tom for like 20 minutes so they can dissect and discuss it. So let's start. The State of the Arsenal Union. Beating Manchester City and Chelsea again in the FA Cup gave us so much hope. Not sure there was any team, any fan who didn't buy in to the process of Mikel Arteta at that time. But Arsenal Football Club are always going to be judged now on their Premier League form. We won the FA Cup 2014, 15, 17, and of course with Mikel Arteta. But as we all know as Arsenal fans, 17 years in the making, we desperately want to win the Premier League again. But let me rewind. We desperately want to be competitive in the Premier League again. Let's look at this now. Under Arteta, our home record is awful. Our goals scored are awful. We've scored as many goals as Crystal Palace this season. Out of all the teams in the Premier League, we're the worst of any team in the top 10. Yes, he's improved our goals conceded, but he hasn't improved our goals scored. And our league position hasn't improved. And I'm not saying Emery was a better manager, but our league form under Emery was definitely superior. The difference between the two managers is that one won their cup final and the other didn't. Emery and Arteta, let's be honest, they both inherited an institutionalized mess. Wenger and Gazidis left this club reeling. They've both signed good players and bad players. Emery signed Leno, Martinelli, Tierney, Torreira, Pepe, Ceballos. Even though he hasn't featured as much recently, Ceballos was definitely one of our favourite players when Project Restart kicked in. He also signed Guendouzi and Socrates and Luis. Luis has been good. He's been the man of the match against Manchester United a couple of times, but he's also been poor. And yes, there were dog signings like Suarez and Listeiner, but let's not lie. There have been times where fans have loved Guendouzi for his performances. They love Socrates for his professionalism and his fight and his Greek madness. And even David Luiz, as I said, for being man of the match against Manchester United in a couple of games. And wasn't it just worth signing Torreira for that moment in 4-2 against Tottenham Hotspur in the North London Derby? One of the most iconic moments in any North London Derby. Arteta rightly wanted to get rid of the players we've all wanted to go. The apathy and the click of Ozil, Kolasinac and Mustafi. Socrates handled himself better than all of those, but he's gone too. And I think we all agree that next up maybe it should be Chambers, Bellerin, Xhaka and Elneny who go. This notion that he and Edu haven't really had the opportunity to build their team might be a little bit ridiculous. They've signed Willian, Partey, Gabriel, Odegaard, Mari, Runnison and Cedric. Whether you agree with it or not, he's ostracized certain players. He sent Torreira on loan to Atletico Madrid. Guendouzi's gone. He decided that Ozil was persona non grata. Mavrobanos is out and he's shining in Bundesliga. Willock has now gone on loan. He scored in his debut for Newcastle. That doesn't mean much, but he's still gone. Maitland-Niles, the hybrid player that we all felt we needed in the team, especially with injury-prone players like Tierney and Bellerin and Cedric, is now gone. Is that going to come back to haunt us? He waited too long, perhaps, to trust younger players, trying to make the old guard fit in, and they didn't. But he did have to deal with COVID. He suffered it himself. And for every manager and every team dealing with that in this league, it has not been easy. But what's happened to our captain, Aubameyang? Ever since signing De Ting, he's regressed under Arteta. Bellerin has regressed, but yet he still plays him. Xhaka has improved, but is it because of Mikel Arteta or because Thomas Partey has improved him in the midfield? Pepe has improved in the last few games. Is that down to Arteta? Or is that because he feels the competition from Willian? Lacazette has been good. He's integrated really well with the younger players. But we need prolific strikers who can score goals, and we've suffered from that. We can't create chances. Even Unai Emery's Arsenal created more chances than Mikel Arteta. Let's not act like Mikel is this lovely, soft teddy bear that everyone is supporting. I like that he's a teddy bear with the shotgun. I wanted a manager who was ruthless, clear the decks to make Arsenal Football Club rise again and to change that DNA and culture. But we're still just a cup team and we've not improved under him in the league. Leeds United, a newly promoted team, are above us. They haven't made too much of an investment to bring in players who can play at Premier League level, but they have had Marcelo Bielsa for a few years. Villa, 1 point away from relegation last season, are now above us. We weren't able to beat them this season at all. Yes, their defence is second best in the league, but do they really have a better front line than us? What gives me hope is what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has done at Manchester United. Manchester United were in a similar position to us, yet he took them up to third and got them back into the Champions League. Whether they could win it or not, what mattered was they got back in, and the financial rewards have a huge implication on a team and a club. Arteta has now two opportunities to get us back to Champions League football. He inherited, yes, a mess from Emery. Emery inherited a mess from Wenger, but both had the chance to get Arsenal Football Club back into the Champions League. Now there's one chance for us to get back into the Champions League, and that's through the Europa League this season. Not because we can win it, but because of the financial rewards that it can bring, which we desperately need. We're fiscally challenged as a football club. Another issue is injuries. What's happened to Thomas Partey? Rarely injured at Atletico Madrid. Muscle injury. Kieran Tierney, muscle injuries. What's happened with that? Why is this happening? If we finish 11th or 12th and don't win the Europa League, tell me why some fans don't have every right to question Mikel Arteta. We have pedigree in the FA Cup. He inherited that, but he still had to win it. And he's riding on those love coupons. There is hope. But if he insists on playing plays like Willian, he'll continue to lose faith of the fans. I hand it over to you, Amanda.
And thank you all for joining us. That'll be the end of the show.
That's the Highbury squad state of the union.
Okay, so that is all Sophie's feelings. Yes. I'm just going to hand it to Tom, really. I mean, look, you know, I've seen a lot on Twitter at the moment about people saying about Sophie wanting Arteta out. She doesn't, because if she did, she'd say it. She would just say it. She is vocal in her criticism of him and certain things that he's done. And that's absolutely fine. I don't agree. And that's absolutely fine too. But ultimately, when people are calling Sophie out, and maybe I joke with them, it is really just jokey. We all want the same thing. We want to win. We just want the best for Arsenal Football Club. So for the people that are new in chat, we're not an Arteta in and we're not an Arteta out. We just want what's best for the club. Some of us agree. Some think that we need patience, which is, I'm one of them. Sophie's got her issues. And now I'm going to go to Tom. Tom, I read your article that you wrote. I really enjoyed it. I really agreed with a lot of it. I'm sure that a lot of Sophie's points you would like to discuss. So we're going to give you the floor. Go.
Interact. I had to get my pen out.
When was the last time you used a pen, Tom?
To be fair, since turning full-time journo, I've had to go for about 50 pens now. I think the most important thing, and I'm really glad, Amanda, that you said there about kind of not being Arteta in, Arteta out, because I hate that so much. Like, the end of the Arsene Wenger room was so toxic because there was a clear like divide amongst the fan base. And I thought when that ended, no matter whenever anyone thought it needed to end, that would kind of maybe move on. And it's very quickly come back into our lives with Emery and then, of course, now with Arteta. Before you kind of talk about how you measure Arteta as a successor or failure, I think it's important to kind of understand the context of what Arsenal are as a club right now. I think that Arsenal are ultimately going to be a club in transition, a club that have been handled incredibly poorly by the people up top, by the recruitment that's happened over the last 10 years and longer. And I think that Arteta was taken over a job from Emery with the whole of the squad on the floor by that point, mentally and with the morale within the squad. And Emery wasn't able to arrest that slide, ultimately, that began with the end of the Arsene Wenger era. And I think that what you've got to look at with Arsenal is what is the realistic expectation of this club? And for me, the realistic expectation this season is to fight to try and be as close to the top four as possible. Not necessarily being the top four club yet, because I don't think Arsenal have got the capabilities with what's available to Arteta right now to be a top four club. I think that Arsenal have remained stagnant for about 8 years whilst everyone around us has improved themselves, and which has obviously led to the decline. I've seen things in this Arteta reign that hasn't happened at Arsenal in a long time. We have been crying out for a good centre-back to come in and for a world-class centre midfield to come in, and Arteta, along with Edu, identified those targets and brought them in. I think that we as a club have defended pretty horribly at times throughout the last 10 years as well. And that is something that I don't like people trampling on this record of the defensive side of things, because I think that it's a real achievement of Arteta to turn around so many poor defensive performances. I think it's been tarnished by some people saying that all he does is put 10 men behind the ball, which I don't agree with at all, because I think that we often have quite a few players in the opposition's final third. And I think that ultimately we've seen glimpses of what Arteta is capable of with the right kind of players in the right positions. I look at this season and I go that it is complete taboo to see Arsenal in 11th place. But I also think that you look at Arsenal and what they are and the teams that are around them right now and know that the league position is a little bit, not irrelevant, but it's deceiving because of how many points that separate us and the top four. It's so congested and it's such a crazy season this year because of COVID and because of how other teams are progressing and how well other teams have done in the transfer window, that little margins and small differences between games have cost Arsenal big this season. And had we have beaten Wolves a couple of days ago, we would have been sixth in the league, which is a really different thing. And I know it's very easy to go, oh, well, if this happened, this means this, and if that happened. But it's genuinely true that small margins have cost us. Thomas Partey's error, as Sophie brought up, is such a big miss because it meant that we didn't improve in the midfield at all. Nothing improved from the summer whilst all the other teams around us improved their squads. So we were without that world-class midfielder. And that's why our new centre-back won Player of the Month 3 months in the first kind of four, I think it was, that he won it. I look at the process and go, at the end of this season, I hope that we're as close to the top kind of six as we can be. And then in the summer, when a few more players can be added, and if he is backed at the end of the 2021-22 season, that is the right time to have a real evaluation of what the job kind of Arteta has done. But within a year, I don't think the impact's going to be that impactful with what has been available to him in that year's time.
The thing is, Tom, though, people haven't got patience. You know, I'm reading some of the comments and I can see a lot more, obviously, on my phone and then what Sophie's putting up as well. They've already judged him. He's not a good manager. That's it. That's it. In a season where he caught COVID, football turned on its head, there's no fans, you know, I know it goes for all clubs. Absolutely. I'm not saying that. But I would never have put my money on United being second. Ever. They were dire, absolute dire. So I've said all along, I'm not going to judge him on this season. If we come 14th, if we don't win a cup, if we crash out the Europa, I'll judge him the season after, at the end of that season, because we need, you know, there's so many factors here. If Partey stays fit, if Tierney stays fit, we're just more of a better team. It's my age, I keep forgetting words. Yeah, we're a better, you're much younger than me. We're a better unit, okay? And it is very small margins. And yes, we can go and look at the defence and we've just done brilliant there. The problem I'm finding, and I've said this for a while, Aubameyang, as what Sophie said is right, we don't know on his personal situation how ill his mother has been and how long for. And if that's the case, then give him that time off to be there. Because he's certainly not been on the pitch for a very long time. We all support him, absolutely, and family come first, absolutely. But we do have other options that we could have played. I still feel that how long, you know, and I argue this with KC, how long do you play a striker for through a bad patch? This is beyond a bad patch, Tom. Now, this is a long, we've had strikers over the years. I've watched it from mid-70s, yeah, like Sophie. We've had strikers that have not scored for five or six games. You get on with it, seven games. I don't know how many goals he's got the whole season and how many games he's played, but it's poor. Now, yes, of course, there are extenuating circumstances and we all wish his mother well, absolutely. But his mind might not be on it, which is totally understandable. So then leave him on the bench for the time being and put Martinelli up there. Now, we can go back to Martinelli's injuries as well. We do have to manage him. And I've said this, I say it every week, he has to be managed. Players like Saka don't have to be managed. They just play every game. And Emil Smith Rowe didn't look so good. So the thing is, there are many things that we pick up from games that don't think he should have done that, don't think he should have done this. Sophie has this thing that me and he completely argue about this, that he was forced into playing the kids at that time. I don't agree, 100% don't agree. I think that was the plan all along. So there's lots of things here, but how can we judge him? It's an upside down season. We're in an upside down world at the moment. No, lockdown and everything. And we don't know how the players are affected. They've got families. You know, we just don't know anything. All I do know is, Tom, and this is where Sophie will back me, is what the hell is his obsession with Willianne? I need that explained to me. I do back Arteta.
Man crush Monday, Amanda.
I know he wants it to work. I understand that. We all want it to work. My God, we want every player to work. We don't care who it is. We are expecting too much, and that comment. But I understand why we expect too much, because it's frustrating, Tom. You knew at a 12:30 kickoff for Arsenal, we're always shy, but other teams seem to win. You knew if we go 1-0 down at that time, and yes, it isn't easy because Lacazette deserved a penalty. It's not the point. We should have won the game anyway. Forget this VAR does drive us insane. I get that. And the decisions we don't get. But they're one or two a game. We have chances to score. We need to take them. And many a time I will sit here.
Virginia.
And,
boom. Exactly. Go on,
we don't.
Amanda.
And unfortunately, our quality striker is not a quality striker at the moment. And how long do we play him for? So, Tom, I am very much Arteta in. I very much am. But I do sit here and question some things. He put Saka to left, because you weren't in the pod, so I'm going to say it again. He put Saka to left back. He put Pepe on the right when we know he's better on the left, and he brings Willian on. And for me, I'm holding my head going, I don't even want to look at social media. Because if I'm feeling it, and I'm very much pro him, God knows what all the people who think he's a waste of space are thinking. I don't understand. I want to talk to you about Willian. What do you think it is? What does he give you? Do you see anything he gives that me and Sophie can't?
No. As the biggest supporter of Arteta as I can be, I can't defend the Willian situation.
That's what I can't either.
I can only try and come up with theories as to why it's happening. I saw hope recently with obviously the amount of games that he's not played in. I also saw, which is funny in itself. But I looked at the Crystal Palace game where we were drew 0-0, and on the bench he had both Willian and Pepe, and he brought on Pepe in that game to try and help us win that. And then when we were winning against, I think it was Brighton and West Brom, he brought on Willian instead of Pepe. So I was like, okay, so he's going to try and bring on Pepe to win games. But when we're kind of comfortable, he's now at the stage where he's going to play Willian. The game the other day against Villa, and he bought off Partey for an injury and brought on Willian, just stunk of a manager that is inexperienced and just made an error. Like, really. And almost like they were going to make a change for someone else, but then Partey's injury meant that he had to come off, and they just didn't change it. And they just didn't think, oh, okay, a different player's coming off, so we'll put someone else on. I don't agree with the whole Martinelli thing. I don't think we should have brought Martinelli on in that moment. I thought we should have brought Ceballos on, because you're bringing off Partey, you're leaving Xhaka in the middle to basically be the sole force. And I know that Villa were going to sit back, but there's this kind of weird obsession that Martinelli is somehow an amazing aerial threat. Well, I don't care how good you are in the air if you're 5'9" against Tyrone Mings and Konsa. You're not going to win too many headers anyway.
No.
I'd rather we brought on Ceballos to play some incisive balls in behind with Ødegaard and ESR to play him Pepe and Saka and Aubameyang. And also bringing on Willian, as you said, meant that we had to push Pepe back out onto the right-hand side, where he struggled so much being on that right-hand side. I don't understand it. I can't defend it. I can't give you a real reason as to why Willian is happening. I just hope and pray that it just gets into his head that it's not going to work.
So, Tom, can I just jump in here? Because as part of that State of the Union, we're talking about the transition of players, right? And Arsenal Football Club have suffered. This is not something that's just happening to Arsenal Football Club. You know, this is something that's been occurring year after year after year. We kind of got everyone excited about signing that one marquee player a season. You know, started off with Santi Cazorla, then we go to Mesut Ozil, then we bring in Alexis Sanchez. For me, some of the most exciting football we've played in years. But we didn't back those signings up with finding that Thomas Partey or finding that, whether it's Pablo Mari or that strong centre-back. We could have gone out and bought Virgil van Dijk. You know, we could have invested that type of money, but we didn't. And now we're seeing the ramifications of that. And yes, you know, Emery made some bad signings. Willian's a bad signing, but they have made signings this season. You know, the player we've always waited for, Thomas Partey, Gabriel, who there's been some regression in his game, in my opinion, a little bit. Started off with a bang, and it seems like maybe the pairing with Holding just isn't working, perhaps. I think we all miss Tierney. We know what he brings. Putting too much reliance on Saka and ESR, but bringing in Odegaard hopefully is going to be something that helps us. As long as he's given a chance, I would start him in the next game. So I just wanted to get your take on this notion of he needs to build his own team. And I've said on this show many times, and Amanda will back me up, that every manager needs to build a team in their image. And Arteta hasn't truly had that cycle, full cycle, to be able to do that yet. But he has got Aubameyang. He's got Lacazette. He's got Pepe. He's got Saka. He's got Tierney. He's got Partey. You know, he's got Pablo Mari, who's probably one of the smartest, slowest footballers we've seen since Mertesacker, but yet complements that back line. Can you talk me through that a little bit and give me your opinion on the fact that this notion that he doesn't have his own team yet, but yet he does have maybe parts of that team, and why we're still not improving?
Can I just jump in a second, just before Tom, right? Tierney injured, Partey injured, Aubameyang off.
But this all is part of it, Amanda. It's part of it. Why are they injured and stuff like that?
But Partey's not. I mean, Pepe.
No, but even in the games they've played, we're lost. We've lost 10 games this season.
And have they all played?
It doesn't. Arsenal Football Club have lost 10 games this season. Partey was not really injured when he was at Atletico Madrid. Okay. Kieran Tierney comes to us and he's kind of a little bit broken. It's very worrying. So I want Tom's take on...
Yeah, of course. Go on, Tom.
He has some of his players, and yet we're still not winning. And you can't tell me that Aubameyang, Lacazette and Pepe aren't as good as Aston Villa or Wolves' front line, Tom. Go on.
It's really hard to look at the squad and not say on paper Arteta's got a great arsenal of players, no pun intended. The thing is, Arsenal's squad, though, is like, it is G&T, to be fair, so spot on. But the thing about Arsenal's squad, it's like a, I'm trying to find the right word, it's a combination of three managers now. And I believe that, and you talked about there, Ozil, Santi Cazorla, and Alexis. And I thought that period of Arsene Wenger was the last great recruiting period that we saw under Wenger. And then the end of Wenger was your Mustafis and your Xhakas and players like that who just was not smart spending. I mean, we could have got N'Golo Kante for 15 million less than we bought Granit Xhaka for. And that always is a bit of a stigma. You brought up Virgil van Dijk, and we were a little bit iffing and erring about him as well, and we didn't get him either. And then Emery comes in, which was completely different, because you've then got Sven Mislintat, you've got Raul Sanyehi on the boards, who are having a big influence on who we sign. Emery's got a say, and Emery basically turned around and said the players that he wants to bring in. And we signed Nicola Pepe, and people say to me that Emery wasn't backed because he didn't get the player that he wanted, which was Wilfried Zaha. It's very well documented now. Zaha's come out and said publicly that Emery wanted him. But in my mind, the reason why Emery failed is because he didn't recognise what Arsenal genuinely needed at the right times. Yes, he wanted a goal-scoring wide forward, but there were other options out there that we could have got for much cheaper. Mm-hmm. And instead, spent that 80 million, 72 million quid we ended up spending on Pepe on a Partey or a Gabriel, not specifically those, but the equivalents during that time. And then you get to the point where Arteta's got a combination of the end of Wenger's poor recruitment with the Mustafis and Xhakas, which we're finally starting to move on. You've got the Socrates signing, which I agree with you was the best of the bunch, but still wasn't the right signing to make at the time. Mm-hmm. You've got young players coming through with loads of potential, which he's now starting to focus on a lot more. And we had the end of Raul Sanyehi's reign, which, as far as I am aware from the information that I've got, which I trust, is that Raul was very heavily involved in the Willian signing. And that effectively, that Arteta was briefed by saying that the signings that we're going to make this summer is going to be a centre-back. We're going to be able to spend money on a centre-back if we'd be able to sell. And we sold Martinez, so we got some money in to sign Gabriel. we were going to get Partey or Aouar with the two names at the end of the window. And that only happened because of Kroenke finally once again opening up the purse strings, and we managed to get that signing done. But at the start of the window, as far as I am told, Arteta has effectively said the only attacking kind of signing you're going to get is either Willian on a free, or a free if you come signing on, and that's it. And Arteta basically turned around and was like, well, I'll take it because I can't trust Pepe with the form that he's been in, basically. And he took Willian, and I don't think anyone in the chat expected Willian to be as bad as he has been. I think that's a fair statement,
yeah.
Because he was providing output. He was in the top 10 chance creators for Chelsea. He was in the top 10 chance creators in the Premier League for Chelsea last season. So he's better than what he's shown us, way better. But he is rubbish now. That is a fact. Like, he is poor now. So whatever's happened to him, we don't particularly know. Maybe it's the last great contract. Maybe he's not trying, whatever. But now Arteta's got a squad which is an amalgamation of lots of different signings which don't really fit together yet. And weirdly, Aubameyang and Lacazette, I mean, Aubameyang was signed because Lacazette didn't have the desired impact. We let Alexis Sanchez go and we signed another £50 million striker when we only have one striking slot in the team. Which made no sense. Like, Aubameyang's been great, don't get me wrong, but go and sign Aubameyang instead of Lacazette. Don't sign Lacazette and then go and sign Aubameyang. So now Arteta's got this issue where effectively you have to give Aubameyang a contract because of what he's done, which was a mistake, I thought. Great signing up to New Deal, but we gave a player a contract for the things that he's done rather than giving a player a contract for the things that he will do. And I think it's very common sense to think that a player between the ages of 31 and 33 is going to give you less than what they gave you between the ages of 29 and 31. That's just natural. That's how football kind of works. The prime is between 27 and 30. So he now is in a situation whereby he's moving on those players with the help of Edu. He's getting rid of that deadwood. Ozil's gone. Whatever you thought of Ozil, the situation wasn't healthy. He's moved him on. We've got a lot of wages off the wage bill. Kolasinac's wages have gone out on loan and we're off of those. We've got rid of Mustafi. We've got rid of... The Saliba situation was awkward and I thought there was mistakes made there. And we've got rid of someone else that I've completely slipped my mind. Socrates, the last one. He's getting rid of these players that we didn't need at the club. And he's brought in three, and then we'll get to January, being Gabriel and Partey. And then he's made a mistake with Willian, which I have a lot of kind of forgiveness for that because I see how much positivity there was from Gabriel and Partey. And in one summer window, he's done the one thing that neither of the previous two managers could do in the last 10. And that's why I look and see hope. And I think that over time, we will see this exponentially pick up. But it is only gradually getting better at the start.
So, Tom, before we get to some questions for you, I need you to help me visualize what your hope is and what that process is. Because one of the things for sure, we've conceded less goals. We had 5 clean sheets before Leno got sent off. We were second in the Premier League in terms of in-form team. But one of the things that still is troubling is inconsistency. And we've been that way year after year after year. And I feel like there's this certain DNA and culture that's seeped into the club. And I bring this up often where I say we're a mentally impotent side, right? I think Arteta's made us stronger and harder to beat, but we still get beaten. There's no excuses to lose to Wolves and Aston Villa twice in a season. And you beat Manchester United and you give us hope, but then we regress. Kevin always says, it's the players. But at some point, as a manager, you have to be able to elevate the players. Why can Marcelo Bielsa elevate inexperienced Leeds players who came from the Championship? Why can Dean Smith elevate Aston Villa players who were 1 point from relegation last season? Why are Leicester City now a more functioning, better buying, transfer-driven club than Arsenal Football Club and have won the Premier League before us and could, in effect, I mean, you know, barring a Manchester City meltdown, win it again? And I understand these institutionalized problems take time to evolve. But when you see some of those managers having an impact, I'd like you to help me understand why fans who are out there who maybe don't believe in the process should trust the process.
The kind of the clubs that you use would Leicester. So if you focus on Leicester for a start, Brendan Rodgers came into a club that already had kind of a cohesive unit that was being completely misused by Claude Puel at the time previous to him. you had your Maguire there, you had your Vardys, you had these players, your Ben Chilwell's coming through, and at the time still had Riyad Mahrez before he was sold to Manchester City. Like you had these players there that were like through good recruitment. Arteta is in a situation which I've already touched upon about the fact that he's taken over a club that was in such disarray. And that Brendan Rodgers has got a much easier job to build upon the good work that's already been done at Leicester, of which they won the league under Ranieri, and then improves on that by making some really astute signings, like bringing in Soyuncu, bringing in Ricardo Pereira, bringing in James Maddison from Norwich, bringing in players that are going to have an immediate impact and are going to seamlessly assimilate into the team as well. Arteta's got to transform a side that were on the floor after Emery left. And he did that amazingly. And he proved that he could get the more out of players in those first 6 months by winning that FA Cup. Because Arsenal don't win an FA Cup if they don't improve after the Emery left. So that 6 months alone proved that he could. And I remember at the time when Mustafi got injured in the semi-final, how many people were turning around and saying, oh, crap, we don't have Mustafi for the final. Imagine saying those words to yourself again. Oh my God, we don't have Mustafi for a call. And people were saying that because Arteta had improved Mustafi. Like, he actually looked one of our better defenders during that period of time. He can improve players. I think he is gradually moving on these kind of players that we've already talked about, and he'll continue to do that in the summer. We've got Lacazette with a year left on his deal, Nketiah's got a year left on his deal, Elneny, Chambers, players that you talked about in your State of Union speech. And the reason why you should just continue to hold faith and to not panic is because, as I've already talked about before, the reasons why Arsenal where they are this season is because of such fine margins. And that 10-week period, the 10-game period where we won one game against Man United, the team was pretty much in a similar situation to what we saw with Emery. And there's a lot of those players that we had were with Emery, because Partey was out and the only new player that was playing was Gabriel, and then Willian, who was in and out of the team because of form, and Pepe was interchanging as well. And we probably would have paid Pepe a little bit more had he not been sent off for three games against Leeds as well. So that meant Willian played even more during that period. And so being in that same situation, Arteta then rescued that period. We went from Boxing Day up until Wolves on a great run of fixtures, which proved that Arteta can galvanise this team, can turn things around. And I also don't buy the point about how he was forced into playing Emile Smith Rowe against Chelsea, because Joe Willock played several games for Arsenal at number 10 and Pepe played in the wide areas. And instead of going back to type and using once again Joe Willock as a 10, he didn't do that. He thought, Emile Smith Rowe showed me in that sub-performance against Everton in some of the Europa League games that actually, yeah, he's now ready after being injured. And so instead of putting Joe Willock, who we know that Arteta likes a lot at 10 against Chelsea and will give you a lot of energy but not much output, he put Emile Smith Rowe there and he did really, really well. We also had Martinelli come back in. That's more fortunate. I'll give him that. I'll say getting Martinelli back from injury is a little bit more fortunate, and he looked so sprightly against Manchester City in the League Cup quarterfinal defeat. And I think that's why we put him in. I trust this manager is making lots of good decisions, but it is just kind of interspersed with these little errors that I put down to inexperience and that he will learn from as he gradually gets better. I don't know if I've fully answered your question.
No, you have. And I just want yours and Amanda's take on this. Lots of great comments coming in, you guys. Strong crowd in live chat tonight. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Highbury Squad with Tom Canton from the Gooner Talk TV. Excellent influencer and analyst, building his channel. Go follow him if you don't already. You're balmy, just like the weather these days. This is the Lockdown Series, Volume 2, Episode 24, coming to you every night. You guys are keeping us as much company as we are keeping you. Do you think an Allegri and a Simeone could get more out of this team?
Is that me or Amanda?
No, it's your last year, gum.
I don't know what Allegri would do with this squad, because what Allegri had at Juventus was this unbelievably cohesive unit of players that knew each other like the back of their hand. This Arsenal team does not know each other like the back of their hand. They barely know the person next to them, let alone. Also, it's just Allegri is someone who had amazing success with clubs that were amazing where they were, and also had great units. Was Pep Guardiola as well as another guy that you could look at. wherever Pep Guardiola's gone, and I rate Pep Guardiola a lot, and I love what he did at Barcelona, and he proved for me that he was a top manager when he won the league with their second team, which no other manager has been able to do in a long, long time in Barcelona B. But when going to Man City, to become regular title winners in the Premier League, you need to spend, and you need to spend a lot, and you need to spend it well. He was able to spend $50 million twice on a right-back in Walker and Cancelo. But we can't do that. We can't spend $30 million on a right-back to replace Bellerin at the moment. And Simeone, like, oh, go on, Sophie, sorry.
No, I don't think Allegri is the best example. I love the question, right? But I'm not sure I like the example, because I think there are certain managers like a Mourinho and Allegri, they need big funds. They're used to like having money they can throw at people. I would have liked maybe the example of, look what Brendan Rodgers has done with Leicester City. Even though Leicester, they've spent money too. We've spent money too, Tom. It's not like we haven't spent money, right? Yeah. So I think those examples are a little better. And I do want to get to the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer example maybe after this, but maybe the comparison should be more like a Brendan Rodgers. Mm. And a Diego Simeone, I think, can build from nothing, but Atletico Madrid have spent as well. You look at what they spent on João Felix and, you know, players like that after even selling big players too. Yeah. It's not like he hasn't had the funds, right? So maybe a Brendan Rodgers would be a better example for us in our league.
If you'd have said to me when Emery's leaving that Brendan Rodgers coming in, I would have been ecstatic. I would have been absolutely buzzing with that. I would have said, wow, Arsenal are making a really kind of interesting appointment whereby he's shown at Swansea that he improved them. But at Liverpool, he turned them into a possible title challenger. And at Celtic, he carried on doing what Celtic were doing really good at, which is winning, other than what Neil Lennon's doing with them right now.
Amazing.
But the thing is...
But Tom, can I just say something? Yeah. Plenty of people would have gone mental if Rodgers would have been appointed. He's so ridiculous, honestly. But carry on. But that, I wanted to point that out, that
you're spot on.
People with a slight intelligence would have gone... He's an all right. I've got Liverpool fans that rate him, you know, rate him. But anyway, carry on.
No. It's spot on. It is arrogance. It is expectation that Arsenal are a club that they're not. It's not that they're not where they are anymore. It's just there's a lot more competition than there used to be for a lot of the places. And that's like the context of Arsenal is that, or the context of the Premier League is so different. Like you look at the Premier League 20 years ago or 10 years ago, the teams that were getting into the top four were ourselves, Man United, Chelsea and Liverpool usually. Manchester City then started to build up that massive money that was coming into them. You had Leicester then gradually getting better, and then they had a really good season where they won the league, and then they built on from that by keeping Jamie Vardy away from us. I reckon if they didn't win the league, we probably wouldn't be able to get Jamie Vardy. Mm-hmm. Why would you leave after you just won the league and you know you're going to progress into the Champions League?
And you're also going to get like 120 grand plus.
Yeah.
And be the big fish in the little pond. You wouldn't have done that at Arsenal. You'd have been level with everybody else.
And then you've got other clubs in the league, like Everton now. Everton's a really weird example this season, because I look at Everton and I go, they are performing at the absolute peak of their powers right now. I don't see Everton with a high ceiling. I see Everton that have bought established players like Alan, like James Rodriguez.
Decore.
They're all in like their late 20s and they're in their prime and they're having a massive impact. And I think that eventually, unless they achieve their target of Champions League and get the money, and I know they've got money coming up from the top with Mashiri there, but that will have to stop, because FFP will come back in after the COVID situation ends. And they've taken advantage of this situation really well. But I feel like they're operating at the max of their qualities. And someone will come in and nab Dominic Calvert-Lewin at some point, as they did with
Arsenal. We need him in. We have 33 crosses in our last game, but no one's headed him in. What about something like this? Because look what David Moyes is doing with West Ham.
Oh my God. But Soph, if you'd have bought David Moyes in, I think there would have been anarchy.
No. I'm not talking about the manager. I would never want David Moyes
off.
I'm giving a comparison of how does he get West Ham. Now, whether they end up where they're going to be or not, the fact is he's improved them. Their league position has been elevated. I gave you the example of Dean Smith. You know, Tom, like, how is he doing this? And you can't tell me West Ham have a better squad than us, do they?
They don't have a better squad on paper. But what the words that Amanda were using earlier is they have a better cohesive unit than us.
Yeah.
And they have a better...
But isn't that down to the manager to have a more cohesive unit?
Over time it is, yeah. But I don't think you have it after one summer window.
No, you don't. And also, can I just say that I really believe this truthfully, and not only just for Arsenal, I think the fact that COVID and no fans in a stadium, we said at the beginning of the season, what players are going to benefit from not having fans there? And
hold on 1 second. The Emirates, everyone has been yelling and screaming that we're dead inside at the Emirates, and now we're complaining.
Yes, but that was with Emery.
Oh, how long was, hold on.
You can't say either way, Soph. That's the thing. You can't say we go back.
Champagne,
I'm telling you now.
Prawn sandwiches, totally.
Do you honestly think Liverpool would have been this bad this season with
That's
their
different.
Fans there?
Liverpool fans Why? Are totally different to ours.
Hold on.
Atmosphere at Anfield has been far superior to us in 10 years.
I've been to Anfield many a time when it's been quite quiet when Arsenal have played. So I'm sorry, this fallacy, yeah, their Champions League nights are phenomenal. I'm not making excuses. I'm just trying to say.
I love that Sophie's in control of the comments.
Of course he is. Yeah, yeah. You'll never see one liking me.
Oh, come on, I put them
no,
all
No, you know, you are not. You're not like that.
Look, see?
Look. No, she even puts comments up that slag her off, Tom. Absolutely. So don't worry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it's funny. But I don't have any say in any of these comments. But no, what I'm trying to say is we don't know. So West Ham may not have been there. We may have been better. We may have been worse. All I'm saying is when we go back, please God, it's in a few months or even August. I just feel that you cannot judge on this season. That's it. Oh, I just find it a bit frustrating that.
You might hate me for this, but I do disagree slightly.
That's fine. I don't mind you disagreeing, but there's no right or wrong. We can't prove it either way.
No. I think that COVID has had an impact, and I think COVID's had an impact on us, obviously, because as a club which hasn't got owners that will throw loads of money into us, we are going to be more affected than a Man City or a Chelsea or whatever. But the West Ham example is interesting because obviously as a club that is not known for hugely spending, they're doing quite well this season. But again, I always bring up the idea of good recruitment, and West Ham have done that recently. And I was on a West Ham show earlier on in the season talking to some of the lads previewing the game in which we somehow miraculously beat them right at the end with that Nketiah goal that was set up by Ceballos. And I talked about how you signed Benrahma, and I was like, that Benrahma signing is so clever because finally West Ham are making some good decisions in the market. Finally, West Ham are looking at the players that are doing really well in the Championship, like Jared Bowen, Mikel Antonio at Nottingham Forest and Hull, and then bringing them in. They're not making the same mistakes that they did with Felipe Anderson from Lazio, I think it was, and bringing in Yarmolenko. Yarmolenko's been all right. But bringing in some of the players that from outside, they think they're going to propel them to the next level, when actually all you need is to look at who's doing really well in the UK and in the Premier League and in the Championship, and then bring those guys in. And that's something that Arsenal haven't done either. Like, we have notoriously always looked abroad to bring in our talent. And it's taken time for some of these guys to transition. Luckily, with Thomas Partey, you've got a player that's so combative and so quality that he will come in and transition straight away. But previously, Arsenal have really struggled with the signs they've made because they've come in from elsewhere and Arsenal haven't. You look at all the top teams in England right now, all of them have invested in Premier League talent. Like Man City go out and spend loads of money on Sterling from Liverpool, Mahrez from Leicester, Walker from Spurs. They bring in players that are going to add to their team from within the league. Man United have started to realise to do that a bit more, but Arsenal just don't do that. And West Ham are doing well because they have a cohesive unit that have improved on players that are doing really well in the UK. And actually, David Moyes as a manager, that West Ham job's perfect because he did an amazing job when he was Everton manager as well. Went to Man United and he's not really cut out for that sort of level. But the West Ham-Everton kind of level, he's perfect for that. And that's why he's doing really well with them as well.
Tom, we're so snobby. You know, there was a whole conversation the other day about I think maybe Robbie may have sent it out. Should Arsenal buy Ollie Watkins? I'm like, that ship sailed, dude. Yeah. Buy Ollie Watkins? I mean, you know, you could argue Arsenal always, you know, Kevin, I and Amanda always say the badge is still the pull, the history and the pedigree of the club. but that history and pedigree starts to fade in the distance in the Premier League. It's still there in the FA Cup, and we still got to a European final and lost it in horrific fashion. Able to really just be a really good cup team, but in the Premier League. But then you see these players, like, for example, James Ward-Prowse.
Great player.
Great player, right? But we're too snobby to want to buy. I saw some fans, Amanda, turning their noses up at maybe signing a Ryan Bertrand. You know what? When you have injury-prone players in that left and right-back position and you've got a versatile player like him, why not? And sometimes it's less risk to go after someone like that and higher risk to go on a free and give Willian 225 or however much grand he's earning a week, you know. And I just feel sometimes we're just so snobby, you know.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little story. So before, when Bruce Rioch was our manager, and obviously we were at Highbury, we used to stand outside the marble halls on the corner, all of us chatting. That's why I know so many people. And honestly, when it was announced that Arsene Wenger come in, no one even knew who he was. So I've been reading comments in the chat while you've been talking about, we just want a world-class manager. We just want a world-class manager. There was uproar when Arsene Wenger was appointed.
That was 25 years ago, Amanda.
Well, now, wait a second. I'm talking about the snobby part here. I'm just talking about the snobby part. That's what I'm trying to get to. There was uproar. There was, why haven't we got such and such? As if we would say Klopp or Pep now, yeah? Why haven't we got... It went on and on. He was booed. No one wanted him. I'm not saying everybody. I don't talk general like that. But I just was like, I didn't even know how to say his name. I thought it was Arsene Wenger. I didn't even know who he was. He was in Japan at the time. Well, lucky David Dean didn't think like that. And lucky David Dean wasn't a snob and didn't want a name coming in. David Dean was as much as an Arsenal fan as all of us. I know he made a lot of money through our club, but he's much of an Arsenal fan as us. He brought in what he thought was going to be the best manager for us, and he brought him right. And all these people that turned around and went, Arsene who turned our club around. No, I am not. It's Kev. Very true. Oh, hello, Kev.
I'm just saying, is that Super Kev?
I think it is.
Is he done with his boss?
Well, Kev would have backed me up, to be honest. He would have backed me up with what I'm just saying about Wenger. We were like, who the fuck is this? And let me tell you, not only after George Graham did he transform us into a different level, people need to understand, you don't need to know the name of the man. It doesn't mean if we'd have brought in Klopp that it would have worked, okay? Klopp suits Liverpool down to a T. I just want us to give Arteta a chance. I received a private message tonight. Someone saw a tweet I put on about my Man City fans saying they'd have Arteta back, all different fans, because they rate him. I had a DM tonight from someone who knows someone who works at the club who says he's a highly intelligent man. He knows what he's doing, but he needs time. Why won't people give him time? As long as we don't get relegated, I'll give him time. But we need more time that you lot out there are prepared to give. Stop being snobby because Mikel Arteta isn't the big name. Maybe he is right for the club, maybe he isn't, but let's give him a chance. Have we lost a lot of games? Yeah, we have. Have we had a lot of injuries? Yes, we have. And I know a lot of clubs have that, especially Liverpool. Look at them, loads of injuries. Have we had our main striker not scoring goals? Yes, we have. Just all I'm saying to people is, if a Ryan Bertrand was offered to us, why would you be snobby about it? It could turn into a wonderful, wonderful player. Let me tell you what happened when Robert Perez came to the club. He was dire. That's all I'm going to say.
But also, like, you can argue, like, I don't like to bring up the enemy, Tom, but Højbjerg and Doherty, but Højbjerg especially, I mean, has, you know, been that player that's helped transform them in so many ways, given them a bit more guts, hasn't he, in that spine and
where
stuff.
He come from?
And exactly. why is it killing you? I'm not making funny faces. but it's true in the sense that, you know, sometimes we just have to take a step back, and especially in this financially challenged world, you know, looking at the championship or looking at lower league clubs, look at Brighton. I know everyone wants to, you know, Ivan to come to the club. You know, everyone's talking about Bissouma, who I think now would be very expensive and there'd be lots of challenges to kind of sign him, Tom. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, when we're looking to build in the summer, what are you looking for? What do you think is going to be the best course for the club? You know, does Chambers go? Does Elneny go? Does Xhaka go? Do we just really super clear the decks and get rid of all those Wengerite Deadwood players? And in order to rebuild ourselves and be challenging in the Premier League again, what would you do?
Thankfully, I think that we've got rid of a fair chunk already, which is good. The biggest priority in the summer has to be a centre midfielder. And I'm saying that because even though we brought Thomas Partey in, you look at the difference between Arsenal with and without Thomas Partey. It's unbelievable. Like, what he gives this team is just... I remember campaigning for his signing throughout the last couple of summers and doing consistent video breakdowns of him, trying to convince more people that he's the right guy. And it feels great to be justified, obviously, but I also made a video on Willian and what he might give. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. But when you look at this next centre midfielder next to Partey, Bissouma's great. I think Bissouma's a perfect example. Like, again, we probably moved too late for someone like Bissouma. We could have got him earlier. We could have got him from Lille when he left there to go to Brighton. But you need to get in that next centre midfielder, because as soon as you've got that base perfect, the two players at the bottom of your midfield set you up, you're really on a good platform to move forward. I think there's other players that obviously we need to look at. With the situation with our strikers, with Lacazette with 1 year left, and with Aubameyang not firing and declining, you have to probably say at this point, which is a shame considering the contract we just gave him, that we have to look at a striker that does what Arteta wants him to do. And by that, we need a striker that is influential across the pitch. We need a striker that's not an Aubameyang, not someone that's a poacher, not someone that's a finisher, but someone that's going to drop deep, link up play, bring the wide areas in. And there are few and far between.
Harry Kane, you mean?
Annoyingly, yes. It's annoying to
Should
see.
Should we pull a Sol Campbell and go get him?
Yeah. Oh my God.
I'd rather have Son, to be honest.
Oh my God.
Son is a phenomenal player.
The options out there to find are really tricky. And we will go back to the kind of this snobby, arrogant thing, because as soon as Arsenal do go out and sign an Emil Pierre Højbjerg, people are going to moan. People are going to be like, what are you doing? Why are you signing someone like that? We need to go sign this world-class player. Well, actually, you just need to be a little bit more level-headed and smarter in the market. So, yeah, centre midfielder. We need a younger striker that's going to be kind of our number nine going forwards, but is a number nine, not necessarily like an out-and-out striker, someone that links play, brings in the wide areas.
Do you like Edouard? Do you think he would work? Do you think he's kind of the opposite of what you were saying?
He's not out and out Aubameyang. Like, he can link play, but he has dipped this season, as has the whole of Celtic. So it's hard to analyse because of how poor they've been under Neil Lennon. And it's hard to know whether he's being poor because they are poor. I mean, you look at Callum Wilson, for instance. Wasn't that great for Bournemouth last year when they got relegated? He's come to Newcastle and transformed them to a side that can actually score goals here and there when they create chances for him. That striker profile is really difficult to look at. I really like, and again, people turn their nose up here, but I like what Patrick Bamford's done for Leeds this season. I really like what he's done there.
Again, Snobby, imagine if we signed him. What's that? What's he? Scored more goals than any of our frontline this season.
Again, he's not the player because of how good he's been this year with, I think, 12 goals and 6 assists already. Again, 6 assists shows that he does bring those other players into play really well.
But Zamir agrees.
We need to find...
That's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen.
What about Marcus Thuram? I've been a fan of his from Gladbach for a while. He's a little bit... He reminds me a little bit of a mix of Super Kev and Wrighty. Bit more...
Yeah,
maybe he's more...
He's used to the left a little bit. He's very good. And their striker is Player, another French forward at Gladbach. But I think he's late 20s now. So I'm not sure if he'd be the right... He might be mid to late 20s. But at the end of the day, guys, it's not our job. Like, it's not our job to sit here and say we need to go out and sign this guy, this guy, this guy. It's on the recruitment of the club to identify the players that Arteta needs in the squad and sign them. And that's the biggest issue, is that we are being snobby at times. There are things. I always use the Johnny Evans example. Like, we could have got Johnny Evans.
Oh, God, yeah. That's a great example. We've used it before on this show as well. You're listening to the Highbury Squad. We've just got a few more minutes here with Tom. Get any last-minute questions you want in and comments, and we'll throw them his way. Do you guys agree? Do you think Gabby could play that role, Tom? Emma's wants to ask you.
Yeah, no, maybe. I wouldn't want to say outright yes or no, and I'll sit firmly on the fence with it. I don't know. I think he did really well in the Europa League when he burst onto the scene. Had a little bit of an aerial ability with his goals that he scored with his head, and a couple of good finishes. But he needs time. He's coming back from a really big injury.
But what about the what about the player that we have? Why are we not giving Balogun a chance?
Or
Moller. I was going to get to Moller, and there was a Balogun. I hit the Balogun, but the Moller came up from Martin. I'll have to find the Balogun. But, I mean, he could potentially be one of those players that comes through, like a Kev, like some of those, you know, other younger players and stuff. Why is he not being given a chance? We talk about his contract, and Kev says if he's not committing, he shouldn't play. But at this point, we can't score goals, Tom. Why not throw him in there and try and convince him to stay?
I agree with Kev in the sense that if a player's not signing, like I feel that it undermines things a little if you play them. But saying that, we had the opportunity to play him previously when he did still have like time left on his deal, and we invested in a striker that I have said on the channel, and I've been criticised a lot over the last 2 years for saying that I didn't think Eddie Nketiah has what it takes to be Arsenal striker going forward. I just don't see it in his frame. I don't see it in his consistency. I don't see it in his output. I'd never saw what the hype around Eddie Nketiah was, and his output just wasn't good enough. Balogun's different because he's stockier. He's got the physicality. He can bring other players. And the thing about a striker like him is that he creates goals for himself. He's not like a Bamiyang that relies on the team to be clicking and working. Balogun creates goals from himself. And that's what we needed. But Moller's really interesting.
But can I just say something about Balogun? I've just heard and seen different things that the attitude might not be right. And Kev and I were talking about this the other day about... That's just as important as your skill on the pitch is the attitude towards, which is where we're seeing Guendouzi gone. Saliba, I don't even want to discuss what's happened today, but I'm talking about him as on a football perspective. Guendouzi more than anybody. You know, when he first started with us and everyone was raving, I was the only one sitting here going, do you want to calm down? I don't actually think he's that good. And then he did win us a lot of games. In the second half, he used to come on and just win us games. Absolutely. I think he got too big for his boots. I think his demands and his attitude and his temperament weren't right. Arteta shipped him out. Don't we want someone like that? He got rid of this situation where no one mentions the word Özil anymore, which is fantastic. We don't mention it. It's done. It's gone. I just think people out there are not giving him enough credit for what he's doing. Then he gets rid of Kolasinac and Mustafi and, you know, and that respect. So, attitude is important, and I quite like that in a manager, that if your attitude isn't right, and I think one thing for Willian, his attitude is right, and that's why I think he sticks with him, which I don't agree, and that is something I definitely don't agree on, but the attitude side of it is what Kev says is just as important.
You're listening to the Highbury Squad. We're here with Tom Canton from the Gooner Talk TV. Tom, 5 more minutes. Are you good with that? Lots of questions coming in and stuff. Hit that like button, just like GD says. We don't usually ask for those types of things. We don't have super chat on our podcast. If you dig us, hit like. If you don't, we'll still be friends. You can come in and comment anyway and let us know what you think. Tom, one of the biggest questions coming in for you, I'm trying to get it collectively. What is a successful and failure season scenario for the Arsenal? And if Arteta does, yes, this season, and if Arteta finishes in 11th or 12th and doesn't win the Europa League, do we still trust the process?
I think if you finish outside the top 10, it can't be considered a success. It's difficult to say it's a failure. I know that it's easy to say if it's not a success. Well, it must be a failure. I don't think it's as black and white as that. But obviously, if the target for us is to try and push towards the top four, if you're nowhere near it, you can't call it a successful season. The reason why I err on the side of saying it's an outright failure is because of how early on it is. If we were talking at the end of the 21-22 season and we were still 9th, 10th, 11th in the table, then yeah, full on, you can call it, he has failed. He's categorically failed to progress the club forward in 2 years after two summer windows and three January windows. That then I would say, yeah, he has failed. But for now, I think with the table as close as it is, 11th in the table is just, it's not a representation of what the final table will look like. It's not a representation of where Arsenal are. And I think if just a little bit of luck starts to change for Arsenal and we can pick up a couple of wins and we aren't as messed up by some of the decisions that don't go our way and we can keep the likes of Partey and Tierney fit for the rest of the season, things will really turn around. I have a lot of hope for the Europa League. I think that we have a real good chance in that competition. I don't know what's going on.
Well, now Diaz isn't playing for Benfica. We've got a shot. So
yeah, exactly.
Wait, aren't we playing Benfica in Rome and then we go and play them in Greece for our home game? Yeah. I mean, I want to just bring this point up, just slightly change it. Why are we making our players travel? I think all the leagues should have been held off, I'm afraid. I don't think it's fair for players around the world to travel to other countries at the moment. And I don't think they've got any say, especially if they don't want to do it.
Amanda, Liverpool have to play their game in Budapest. I mean, this is ridiculous. I'd love to go to Athens. I mean, you know, I'll fit in right well.
Yeah, you will.
In Athens. But, I mean, it is kind of crazy that this is happening.
And internationals are happening. It's ridiculous.
I think it would be more relevant, PG, if there were fans. But now there aren't. Does it still make a difference? I don't know what you guys think about that.
Well,
like, imagine if there were fans, you know, they were still able to have some fans, but they still wouldn't. And also it's government laws, which I don't think we can do anything about. But it just seems kind of crazy, to be honest with you.
Can you imagine, though, if you're a player whose wife's just had a baby or something and you are going to travel to another country during COVID and you have to go? I mean, this is why I'm saying about this season being so mental that we need to just write it off. So whatever Arteta does or doesn't do, then it's next season when hopefully life is back to normal. And I'm sitting in my seat in the East End upper in tears because I'm so happy to be there and everyone else is going to be the same. Mm. That we need to judge him then. I can see all the comments people saying to me, you know, you're making excuses. I've never been one to shy away from my opinion. And when my opinions are proved wrong, then I will hold my hands up. But let's just give him a chance. I don't agree with some of the changes he does and substitutes and stuff. But do you not think Arteta wants to make this? Don't you think he wants to be successful at Arsenal? I just don't get it.
Okay, so before we leave, I think it would be remiss of me not to bring this up. And I kind of don't want to because my opinion is this. When you're young, you do really stupid things. I've done stupid things. And I've done things that maybe I don't want the public to know about. We've all done it, right? This video's emerged. Obviously, Saliba's gone on record 3 or 4 times criticizing Arteta. Listen, Pepe went on international duty and criticized Arteta. But Arteta took it a different way because maybe he was seeing Pepe trying in training. Maybe there's a different scenario right there. There are a lot of Arsenal fans who are pissed off with Saliba for complaining and being very outspoken. Isn't it incredible, the timing of the video? PR never ceases to amaze me. How has this not come to light before? So he's saying what he's saying while he's out on Nice and on loan, doing very well, by the way. Obviously, he's comfortable. Kids lost his parents. You move to another country. I've moved to another country when I was younger. It's not easy.
No.
I just so happened to move to another country where the language was English and I could read the road signs and I could communicate with people. I think sometimes it gets a little bit lost that these players move. And we talked to Kevin about this on the Inside the Dressing Room series too. It's like you move to another country. You've got to adapt. You've got to find a place to live. You're young. It's not easy, right? And I'm not being funny. Guys do crazy things. My cousins have told me crazy stories about what happens on boys' holidays. And I've seen what happens on girls' holidays. The snake in the room is the person who leaked the video. The idiot in the room is Saliba for videoing it and sending it to his friend. Tom, I'm going to start with you. Something we have to address. Your take.
Yeah, I'm 100% agreement with you. Whoever's leaked the video, it's a real, obviously, shame. Like, you can't condone what Saliba's done. Like, it's really stupid for obvious reasons, and it wasn't great to wake up to this morning. And in fact, with the news today, I'd said that I didn't want to write about it. I just was not going to put my name to it. But like, my honest view on it was that doing that, like, obviously being in the French youth side and wearing the colours of France as well, has made the situation even worse for him, because now the French Federation are investigating, and we know what has happened previously with players like Nasri and Ribéry and Benzema and Valbuena. The French Federation take things very seriously, and it could have some really big ramifications for him in the future. So something that stupidly happened, which... obviously, the person in the video should have been the main person at fault for whatever the hell they were doing. He is at fault for videoing what was going on. And I can't work out the mindset of why he's done that, but he has. And I'm assuming that the club will have a word with him. He has gone through a horrific period, like, personally, with what happened at the end of the summer, with the confirmation or lack of confirmation of what happened behind the scenes. In fact, I'm very happy it's no one reported officially what happened, because it should be kept behind closed doors. It's a very personal situation for him. I do feel that he's been too outspoken in terms of his interviews, but there is always the side of it saying that he's done them in French. Things can be lost in translation. Things can be taken out of context, but it is the frequency of the interviews that I kind of struggle with, and think that just get your head down, play your games, and if someone asks you about Arsenal, just turn around and say, look, I'm focused on Nice right now, and I'm going to get on with that.
Yeah. PG, do you have any comment on the video?
No.
Okay.
I don't comment.
That's what I should have done.
Yeah, no.
I mean, you know what? It would be remiss of us. You know why? Because it's such a polarizing conversation, and the timing of the video is kind of insane. But like Tom said, and rightly so, the biggest issue is him talking out and why he's talking out and speaking out. Why don't you just put your head down, play football, and show that you're worth playing for Arsenal? Clearly, there's an issue. And when you do go through a life, you know, experience, it's not easy. So the video, I don't think at this point is his fault. Of course, someone's gone back and said, oh, I can make some money off this. I mean, you know, I'm in the PR game. It happens all the time. Some of the celebrities, the things that go on behind closed doors, you guys. Let's not be naive. Some of the comments, immature. Sex happens. People have threesomes. They have group sex. It is a reality in pop culture and entertainment and sports.
But and in life. Because they're human. Just because they're actors or actresses or footballers. But what I do want to say about Saliba, and it's where I go back to being what Kevin and I were talking about, the attitude. I'm not going to discuss the video, but I wanted to discuss some of the comments, is that I think Arteta should have sat him down with a video, VCR, DVD, whatever you want to call it, of Nicholas Bentner. Watch this, son. Come back to me in a couple of days when you've watched from beginning of that potential of what we were going to have to where he ended up, because he is the pinnacle of what you don't do as a teenager. And if you have mentors that can help them. So on the other side of it is a young French kid. He's lost his parents. It's not easy. I couldn't go to France. I only know about 20 words and that'd be the end of it. I'd find it hard, and I'm 51. So I do try and look at that side of it. But remember something, people. I say this all the time. We do not know what goes on behind closed doors at Arsenal Football Club. Forget what you hear on Twitter, Facebook, the papers. Most people don't know anything. It's only those that work in that situation, in that environment, that understand what's going on. If a player's taken a knock, he won't be picked. He'll be on the bench. But you're questioning why he's on the bench. Remember what I say. We know nothing, okay? I remember the night before Ozil signed, or two nights, someone came up to me at Arsenal and knew me and whispered in my ear, we're going to sign Mesut Ozil. I looked at him and I went, shut up. There wasn't even a rumour. And he said to me, we're signing him. From that day on, he's the only guy I've ever believed on anything. And everything he's ever told me over time has completely happened. Mm. One person. I don't trust anybody else. So my point is this, sit him down with a Nicholas Bentner video of his life from start to finish at Arsenal.
I'm going to post the Bentner comments, that's for sure.
No, no, but he, that boy, we were so excited. It was like watching an Emile Smith Rowe. I was so excited, and then he ruined it.
I mean, he must be so embarrassed, to be honest with you.
Such
today.
A shame.
And it's a shame, and look.
But he's recognised that. He's recognised it now.
Yeah.
Too late. But you know what? Balogun. Balogun could be unbelievable for us, but we don't know what's going on. That's the frustration of it, because we all want to see him. We need goals, and he looks like he can score goals for toffee, or whatever you call it.
Well, toffee's good job you didn't say sticky toffee. Well, I just did. There you go. Look, anyway. 800 plus live in chat. Please hit that like button. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Remember, this show is sponsored by footballprizes.co.uk. Go over to their site right now. You could be up for grabs with some Aubameyang memorabilia. We're going to give away a free ticket tomorrow on the show, so make sure you're listening. Your name will go into the hat to be able to win the Aubameyang memorabilia that Football Prizes are offering. They're a great group over there. Tom, you know those guys too, huh?
Yeah, they sponsor us as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, so yeah. Really good, Bill and the team over there. So make sure that you go over to footballprizes.co.uk. Some really great Aubameyang swag. And no matter what everyone says about Aubameyang, 2018, 2019, his goal saved Arsenal Football Club. Between him and Leno, they saved us. Mm. So let's hope that he can find his striking boots again. Let's forget all this Saliba crap. Let's erase the chaos. Let's focus on the football. Let's focus on our team moving forward. And let's focus on what we're building or trying to build. It's not good. It's a bit dire. Arsenal Football Club are 11th in the league. Look at the teams above us. But all we can do is hope that we can get better. And whether that happens with Arteta or the next manager, it's always the badge that counts. That's all. PG.
I would also like to say something Tom said, and then we'll go. Tom, we had a bit of luck. We had that little fragile run where the luck started to change. And then we played Wolves and came out in the best 45 minutes of football, 44 minutes of football we've seen. And I'm sorry, but that isn't our fault. This is the Luiz situation. I don't blame him either. Unfortunately, luck was against us. We need to find that luck again on Sunday. That's what we need. Sunday, we go again. And I'd like to thank my friend.
Everyone's Tom. Loving it. He's getting some fantastic comments in the house. You've got to come back, Tom. Do you promise to come back?
He's like one of our James and our Dan and everybody that's so cool that comes on our show. We really appreciate it, Tom. We know you've got your own show.
Everyone gets a rating on the show. And in true PG style, she started this, the 0.7899.
Oh, you nearly got a 10 out of 10, Tom.
I always say there's room for improvement. So there you go.
So really appreciate you coming on, Tom. And if you ever want me and Soph to come on yours, we will come on yours as well. Thank you so much. Go and follow him at The Gooner Talk TV and at Tom Canton Media and read all his articles. You may not agree, and that's the beauty of football. It's all about opinions. Thanks, everyone, for listening to us. Thanks, Sophie. Good night, everyone. And remember, always Arsenal.